Hello and welcome to an episode of Everything is Canon, a Cinelinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to the powerhouse sister writing team of Serena and Sasha Nanua, all about their great new book, Sisters of the Snake, which is being described as Deadly Magic, Hidden Temples, and Dark Prophecies. Sisters of the Snake is an action-packed, immersive fantasy that will thrill fans of The Crown's Game and The Tiger at Midnight. While all that is certainly true, Sisters of the Snake also takes a tired swap roles trope and gives it a much-needed boost of representation that will attack all five of your senses. With a great top-to-bottom cast, solid world-building, and a wonderful mystery element, Sisters of the Snake, while perhaps familiar, isn't typical at all. We talk about how this book has one of the best covers of the year, their unique writing situation, favorite characters, Sisters of the Snake, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, if we ever do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. And this should be done all year long. Also, June is, of course, Pride Month, so support LGBTQ plus authors any way that you can, either by boosting them online, buying their books, leaving reviews, etc. And also, that kind of support shouldn't end June 30th, so try and be an ally all year long if you can. Serena Nanua and Sasha Nanua are twin sisters living in Ontario, Canada. Born on Diwali, 10 minutes apart from each other, they grew up loving stories about twins and magic and began writing books together when they were 9 years old. They are graduates of the English and professional writing programs at the University of Toronto and are also the authors of the Pendant Trilogy. They are here today to discuss their debut novel, Sisters of the Snake, which is being described as Deadly Magic, Hidden Temples, and Dark Prophecies. Sisters of the Snake is an action-packed, immersive fantasy that will thrill fans of The Crown's Game and The Tiger at Midnight. Please welcome to the show a pair of beautiful Canadian authors, Serena and Sasha. Hi, guys.
Hi, Steve.
We were sort of just talking offline. I was just telling you how much I love this book, and I can't wait to talk about it. I'm so happy you're here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
We're all fellow Ontarians. Is that a word? Is that how you say
Ontarians?
That's what I'm going to call it. That's what we are. Have you guys been vaccinated? How are you feeling? Have you managed to stay healthy the past year and a bit? How's it been going for you guys? Maybe Sasha take this one.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy, but we did get our first vaccine last week.
Nice.
So that felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a pretty long wait for the second one, but at least there's something.
Right. The thing about the second one's funny because they keep changing the rules, right? You remember at one point, not that long ago, it was 21 days. Now it's like 10 years later, you can get your second one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in the US, it seems way faster. Like you look down there and everybody's like fully vaxxed, hanging out with their friends, and you're just up here like, all right.
Yeah, the US is weird because it's like now they have too many vaccines, right?
Yeah.
They're like running into that issue now where they've run into people who, you know, anti-vaxxers and conservative types who just don't even want it. So now they have too many vaccines. And here we are, like, you know, we've got nurses that still haven't had two vaccines. So it's like, give us some vaccines. Anyways, well, that's good. I'm glad you guys have been safe and healthy and your family. Hopefully that goes the same for them and any of your friends. And pretty good time to be an author, though. I mean, you're shut in anyways, right, Serena? I mean, like, I don't know about you. This hasn't cramped my style one bit. I don't have a social life anyways.
I mean, I'm, like, really introverted. So
yeah.
I can stay inside for, like, months. There's probably been times during this pandemic when I haven't stepped outside for, like, months. And that's not a good thing. But, you know, I just don't even go outside that much anymore.
Right. Yeah, well, that's it, right? I mean, especially because you guys are working on book two, so I don't know where we'll ask me where you are at that stage later, but you know, you're authors, so it's like you're a shut in anyways, right? Like if you had a social life, you wouldn't be an author. Right? And I'm just a loser, so I'm just like, it doesn't matter to me. I can sit inside and read books all day. It's great. I'm the same as you. Like, there was at one point I remember thinking, I'm like, when was the last time I went outside? So anyways, so that's been good for writing purposes anyways. I don't know how it is for creativity and inspiration for you both. Have you guys found just that, you know, I mean, the world's always kind of a shithole anyways, but with the pandemic, have you guys found that you've been stifled creatively, or have you guys been okay? I mean, you've got a deadline, so you don't really have a choice there, but how has it been, Sasha, for you just from a creative standpoint?
I mean, I guess the deadlines have been putting us kind of in focus, but even without the deadline, like, I think late last year, we really had a lot of creativity, like around Christmas time. Maybe it's just because we love Christmas.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that was when we wrote the first draft of the second book.
Okay.
So there was like a lot of fast writing. We wrote it during NaNoWriMo. And then, you know, we kind of took a break, but even if, you know, life is hard, I think we always try to look to our books for some inspiration and some fun.
That's good. That's a really healthy way to do it, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see what original stories come out in a year or two that were sort of birthed during this pandemic, right? You know, I'm curious, is it going to be probably, it should probably reflect the writer, but, you know, will they be hopeful stories or cynical stories, or, you know, it'll be interesting to see. When Sisters was sold, was it a duology or a trilogy?
It's a duology.
Okay. So, because you were just saying you drafted the second book during Christmas. Did you outline both books originally when you sold it, or just the first book?
So, this is Serena talking.
Yep.
So when we did the first book, did we outline it? The first book, we definitely thought through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When we sold it, we gave like a very short kind of, not even a proposal, like it was a pitch.
It was super short, like maybe a paragraph.
Yeah, like a paragraph for the second book. That was it.
Okay.
Was
it always going to be a duology? Is that what you is that what you pitched, or did you pitch a trilogy?
We did pitch a duology. Yeah.
Okay.
Trilogies are just a little hard these days, like to get the publisher on board.
It is, and I've talked to a lot of people who are on their second book now for duologies and stuff, you know, a couple of them have said they pitched as a trilogy, but each time we're talked down to two books. So it's like, yeah, exactly. It's a commitment too, right? And, you know, unless you've got a really specific fleshed out idea for three books, it's a tough sell, isn't it? I mean, it's an investment there, and so much can change, you know, I don't know. It's a tough go, but are you feeling though that you're going to be able to tell, we'll go to maybe Serena with this one. Are you able to tell your story in two books? Like, are you feeling confident that way?
Actually, when we were working on the second one during NaNoWriMo, I was like, oh my gosh, how much do we have to put in this book just to wrap everything up? Because, you know, this is our last chance to really get across, you know, everything. But now that we're back into the book revising it, I'm like, this is right. It should be two books.
So book one's almost 500 pages. I don't know how many words it is.
It was about 120,000 words.
Okay, so.
And the second book is about the same.
About the same. Yeah.
About the same. So, okay, that's two pretty beefy books. That's pretty good then.
Yeah, pretty beefy.
You're feeling, you're feeling confident. And now it's, okay, was that edited down to 120,000, or are you guys pretty efficient that way?
At one point, it was like 130,000. That was just too much.
That was too much.
So we really, our editor said, you know, we need to pull back. At one point, it was around 116,000. And then we kind of went through copy edits, and then somehow it went up. I don't know how it went up.
You added a party. Yeah, at 130, you're like, why are they just standing around? Yeah, we need to get them moving here. Okay, well, so that's cool. What about reading? What do you guys like to read? Series or standalones?
We definitely like series. Yeah.
Both series. Okay. I'm a standalone because I'm nuts and I have like closure issues and I hate waiting, right? Between books. Like, it drives me nuts. Like, this is driving me nuts that you guys know how part two ends and you're not going to tell me.
Well, it's interesting because as we work on it, things are always changing. So it's
sure.
Like, what's really going to be the ending? I don't know.
Right, right. So even if you did tell me, it could change slightly. But you must have a pretty good idea, I'm sure. Do you write story? Let's go to Serena. Do you write linearly, or do you guys conceive of the ending first and then sort of? Because I know, I think I saw an interview or read an interview with you guys where you both admitted to being pantsers.
Well, we're a bit of both, I think. Okay. Like, we definitely like to plot beforehand, yeah. But then as we're writing, things will definitely change. So, and it's interesting because Sisters of the Snake is the first book that we ever wrote with two points of view.
Right.
So people just automatically assume that one of us took one perspective, one of us took the other, when, you know, that's not the case. We both worked on both perspectives, but it just depends on the draft. One of us will be more focused on Rhea. One of us will be more focused on Ronnie.
Yeah, I read that, Sasha, somewhere that you know, because you're right. That's the natural inclination for people, is to assume you each took a sister and ran with it. But I was reading something, Sasha, and you guys were talking about sort of your strengths and weaknesses, right, as storytellers. And whereas somebody, and this is not the whole complete of who you each are, but one of you is sort of more the idea person, the other one sort of like one likes outlining, one prefers sort of editing and stuff like that. Is that so, you know, in that sense, that really helps in the situation, doesn't it? So like, sure, maybe somebody's doing more Ronnie work, but at the end of the day, both of your hands are touching the paper, right?
Yeah. So basically in every draft, we'll kind of switch off who's kind of focusing on which perspective. So in one draft, I might focus on Rhea, but then in the next draft, Serena will focus on Rhea. Mm-hmm. So we'll just kind of switch off like that for every draft. And that way we're really both kind of working with both perspectives. And we're always kind of outlining as we go as well. So we're really thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm. So, Sasha, like, I've spoken to co-authors before. They're not uncommon, right? They're not common either, but they're not uncommon necessarily. But I've never talked to two who live in the same house before. So, and when you work and live together, that's the cause of many divorces in our country, right? For married couples. So it's hard when there's no escaping it sometimes. So what do you, Sasha, what do you do? And then maybe to Serena after, like, just to escape, just to sort of like unwind for a minute or two, like just to get a step away from it. You know, are you, first of all, are you regimented that way? Are you able to do that? And, you know, how do you create separation between the two of you?
Well, we do a lot of stuff together. It's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also have our differences, and
of course,
that we kind of balance each other out in that way. Yeah. And in terms of kind of like separating ourselves from our work, we like to take a lot of breaks. Maybe we watch a little too much TV. It's just an addiction.
Is one of you more inclined to do that than the other? Like, is one of you more of a taskmaster than the other?
You know, well, I think that both of us like to kind of stay organized, stay on top of things.
Right, and then, on. That's good.
You know, we both love TV. Like, I just love watching Food Network. Like, we watch all the shows. We reportedly watch them at lunchtime.
There's a, in my town, there's a little catering business, and I can't remember her name, but she won one of the Chopped Canada.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she's from this area. She moved back here and opened a little catering business. So it's like, it's on, she has it like up in the window, like Chopped Canada winner, you know, like, oh, wow. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Okay, so you guys so it's the same answer, essentially TV for both of you, when you just sort of want to like zone out, tune out for a bit.
TV, and I, Serena, I really like audiobooks. I just kind of got into them this year because with the pandemic, I just can't really focus as much. So I find that having an audiobook allows me to kind of like multitask, and like, I can do the laundry, whatever.
Serena, I'm the opposite. I fucking hate audiobooks. I can't do it. I don't know. My brain isn't wired that way. I just can't do it. I've tried. Although there was a really good audio drama this year, a Star Wars book that came out, Dr. Aphra, Sarah Kuhn wrote it, and it was really good. But it was like a full production, though, right? It had like sound effects and stuff like that, like in a cast and everything. So that was really great. But just straight up like one person audio ebooks, I can't. It's just, I don't know. I'm not able to do it. So good for you. I wish I could, because I would be able to squeeze more books in that way, right? Like when you're driving and stuff, but I just can't do it. So
I just put it on like a 1.8 times speed and I'm good to go.
Are you the same, Sasha, with audiobooks or no?
I do like them, but I tend to read more thrillers. Serena really doesn't like thrillers.
Okay.
And I like sometimes
it's not that I don't like them. I just don't really.
It's okay if you don't like them, Serena. No,
you know what?
There's no judge. There's no judgment here.
I don't know. I like to flip to the end of the thriller that Sasha's reading just so I can know what happens and then see if she's guessing what's happening correctly.
I'm going to admit something to you guys for the first time I think I've ever said on air before, but one thing that I do is because this year with the pandemic and getting print arcs has been trickier this year. So I've just read a lot more digital books. Right. And I'm still not like with it. Like I just prefer printed books for sure. But the search function on digital books is really handy. Right. If you're just looking up a word or something and you know what a lot of times when I'm reading a book, I'll just search the word. It's because I read a lot of YA and sapphic type books. I'll just look up the word kiss because I want to get to the part when the couple kisses for the first time because it makes me feel good because they're happy. It's weird. I know. I'm sorry. But another recent Canadian thriller, June Hur's book, Four Stolen Girls. That's a really good, that's a great thriller.
I just started that when I got it in the mail pretty early and then I started it and I was like, this book is so good. I don't know why I put it down. I better continue.
The first chapter is killer. Isn't it great? The beginning of that book. Oh my God.
And I just love the silence of bones.
She is super nice. Oh, she's so nice.
We met her in person lots of times.
Was she ever at, you guys have done some Canadian sort of writers camps, right? Was she ever at any of those? Or?
Yeah, like we would just kind of meet up for fun and go to book signings and stuff like that. I think that was the last time we ever saw each other in person was a book signing.
Well, yeah, because that'd be, you know, pre-pandemic, right? So, well, I'm jealous. Can I just come hang out with you guys or no? God, it sounds like so much fun.
And we saw that you're going to be interviewing Lizelle, who's
tomorrow. Yeah.
She's another one of our writer friends. So
was it you guys on your social or somebody else posted sort of a picture of you guys at the last time you were all together? Somebody.
I posted a picture of the first time we met Lizelle.
Okay. Right. There was a group of you. It was
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah. I love that. And there's this famous beach in LA where all these really great writers hang out, right? Like Christina Hammonds Reed and Nama Naforna, and like they're all friends and they just hang out with each other at this beach. I'm just like, where's this magical beach where like, you know, my favorite writers are all just hanging out casually. I'm just like, what the fuck? Yes, I'm talking to Lizelle tomorrow and I am super stoked because I mean, have you guys read Blood Like Magic yet? Or
I have it. I don't know why I haven't read it.
Okay. It is pretty damn good. So I was going to ask Serena, when you guys attend these camps, I always think it's really cool, these camps, the way they work. And I love it. I love just the concept and the idea and how you sort of all come together and help each other out and bounce ideas off each other and proofread stuff for each other. Because you guys already work sort of in a team, how is that? How do you carry that team into a group sort of dynamic with you guys? Do you enjoy it?
I think that, you know, because we naturally already work together, because we're twins, I feel like we already understand each other's writing. So obviously going into a group setting, it's a bit different because we're working with, you know, different people, different writing styles. But, you know, that's what makes it interesting is getting different opinions on each other's work.
Do you find it productive?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, we can read over each other's writing. We can have, you know, so many ideas, but we already have such a similar mindset that sometimes you need that outsider perspective.
Right. Sasha, one thing that I really am attracted to in a person is gall, you know, like daring, like the will to act, you know what I mean? So like, if you're feeling, you know, misrepresented in books that you love, let's say, and you want to see yourselves in a book or on the cover, then go write it. You know what I mean? Because if no one's going to do it for you, you have the guts to go do it yourself. And you guys wrote at the beginning of this book, there's a really beautiful letter to the reader, which I thought was amazing. And I love that. I love it when authors do that. I'm a cover to cover person. I read everything between the covers. And I really love it when authors do this. And you explain in this letter sort of your inspiration for the book, right? Why you wrote it, stuff like that. I just encountered this in another book where the letter to the reader isn't going to be in the final copy. Is that the case here? Or is this going to be in the final copy?
No,
this is actually meant for the ARC only, I believe.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
I don't know, the publisher, they like to have these kinds of letters just for the ARCs, just for the reviewers.
No, for sure they do. And it's like, and I, you know, I guess I should feel special, but they're always so great and beautiful and I love it. And I really want people to share it, other people to see that, because I mean, you guys know, like, what are the five questions you're going to get asked all the time when you do these things, right? Like, what's the book about? What inspired you to write the book? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So you get the same questions all the time. And here's this letter, this handy letter that explains why you wrote the book, right? Mm-hmm. It's just so great. And so what the episode I just posted today, actually, I just interviewed Justine Ireland for her new book, Ophi's Ghosts. Mm-hmm. And it was the same situation. So she actually posted the letter on her Twitter feed because it really talks about the amount of work and research she put into, you know, the Great Migration for Blacks at that, you know, back during the Jim Crow era and all that stuff. So it's like, it's good information to have, I think, as the reader. And same goes for this letter, which you wrote, Sasha. I think it's gorgeous. So I don't, it's up to you guys if you want to make sure it gets out of the world at some point, but
that's a good idea.
I don't know why I didn't think to post it.
Yeah. I mean, wait for the book to come out. I think I think that's what Justina did. She waited for the book to come out first, but it's a beautiful letter and it really goes to the heart of why you wrote this book. And like I said, like, you know, you read all these books growing up and you're not seeing yourself in these books or on the covers. And so what do you do about it? So if the industry isn't going to come to you, you guys went to the industry. And I think that's amazing. Yeah. And that's a great story. And I think more people should know that. All right. That's my two cents. So
like that kind of media growing up, like Mary-Kate and Ashley and all that. But obviously, like, we never saw any kind of brown twins.
No.
You know, having those kind of twin switch adventures. So that was just naturally the path that we wanted to take for the book.
Right. And that's like, exactly. That's, I mean, exactly why you say all that in this great letter, right? So, I mean, people should know that, because, I mean, that's, to me, art is process. I've had this conversation a lot lately with authors. I think art is process. Like, we can never take that away from you guys. When you thought of this book, conceived of it, wrote it, cried over it, fought over it, you know, whatever, all your, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into writing these things, we can't take that away from you ever. But once it's done and out in the world, it's just a product. Like, I can throw it away. I can burn it. I can use it as a table for my coffee cup. You know what I mean? I can do whatever I want to it, but I can never take away that process from you guys. And I think that's why I think art is process. And that's what I think that letter is so important. And I really think you should think about, once the book is out, posting it out in the world somewhere. But I'm an idiot. Don't take my advice on anything. But anyways, that's my two cents. All right.
I really like that advice.
Okay. That's yours then. Think about it. Because it is a really beautiful, it's beautifully written. It's just one of those things I think people need to get out there.
It's funny because we only had like maybe 1 or 2 days.
I think we had 1 day to write it. Like, our editor wanted a very quick turnaround.
See, now you're just bragging. Now you're just like, we're so friggin' great. They wanted this beautiful, emotionally resonant, thoughtful letter from us. So we just whiz-banged it out. It's like, no problem.
Yeah. And on top of that, we were at our cousin's wedding. So we were like, let's just get this together in our minds and write it when we get home.
You're just like, we'll just write it on my phone. It'll be quick. No problem. Yeah, yeah. We'll just make Steve cry. So, all right. One of these things, you usually do like a ton of prep for these interviews because I like to keep things loose and fun, right? And, you know, I really don't want to ask a bunch of like, you know, twin questions, right? Like, tell me about your twin magic, or who's the evil twin, or, you know, can you communicate telepathically? You know,
I can tell you who the evil twin is.
No, we're not going to go there. So I saw this on an interview and I thought it was kind of a fun idea. So what question would you like to be asked? Is there something that you never get asked that you'd like to be asked and that we could talk about?
That's crazy. I never think of it.
Right? It's nuts, right? Think about it, because I know I'm putting you on the spot. So if there's anything you want to talk about, anything you want me to ask you, we'll do it. Like something that hardly ever comes up, maybe whenever, you know, you've done other stuff before, right? So if you ever thought like, no one ever asked us that, think about it, scribble it down, and we'll get back to it. After I go on, I'm going to go on a quick rant here about the cover. So just bear with me just for a second. All right.
All right.
I love this book for a lot of reasons, mostly Amir, but I love this book, but I love how there's so much to think about even before you open it. So like Sisters of the Snake, the title right on the big beautiful font on the cover, right? There's so much to think about just with that title. It sounds weird, like a weird, scary cult or like a heavy metal band or something. And it's like a lot of people are afraid of snakes. So right away you're like, oh fuck, like what's this book, right? And then you've got this beautiful orange everywhere, which represents the color. That orange represents so many different things, right? It would take too long to even get into, but it's a very important color in Indian culture, especially, right? It's mainly about letting go of what holds us back, or, you know, discarding, you know, what isn't helpful. It's the color of connection, a community. It means so many different things, right? Selflessness, belonging, courage. So there's this, so you have all this beautiful orange on the cover and you're like, okay, maybe it's not so bad. I'm getting over the snake thing now. And then you put two of the most beautiful women I've ever seen on the front cover, right? And they're gorgeous and like just, oh, they just glow and you see them right away and their heads form the shape of a heart. And you're like, oh, this is so great. And then their headstone is color red. It's blood. It's the bloodstone. And like, what do you mean blood? What's going on here? And then their braids join and form the head of a snake. And you're like, what the fuck's going on here? It's so great. I love this cover so much. Serena, you're like me. You guys see a lot of covers every year, right? Whether you're reading them, you're in the industry. You see so many. And I'm telling you, this cover is going to end up on a lot of top 10 lists at the end of the year. I guarantee it. No, you don't think so? I think so. Talk to me about this cover. You must have been thrilled with it. I think it's a killer cover. I think it's fantastic. And I see a lot of covers.
I mean, it's one of my, I'm pretty biased. So
of course,
it's one of the best book covers I've ever seen, but there's just so many amazing illustrated book covers coming out these days, and I think especially from our publisher, so we were really happy that they were able to put this together, and we even specifically asked them if they could illustrate Rian Rani on the cover, and they did. That's exactly what they did. So
you guys are pretty stoked with it. Did it go through like many revisions or iterations, or was this kind of it from the, like I said, the little things, right? Like, you know, the braids forming ahead of a snake, and, you know,
the braid snake was there from the beginning.
Okay. So
at least from what we saw, I know the artist herself on her Instagram, she posted some of her initial versions of her initial sketches. And
who was the artist?
Her name is Fatima Beg. She's in Pakistan. So she did the cover, and she was basically told like to draw these twins and to somehow incorporate a snake and to incorporate this bloodstone into the background.
Right.
So I just don't even know how she came up with this braid snake idea. Like, that's just brilliant. And that was there from the first sketch. So I think that's funny that you bring that up, because when I first saw the cover, I didn't even know, that wasn't even the first thing that my eye was drawn to. I saw the snakes in their hair, but I didn't even notice how their hair made the snake until Sasha pointed it out, and I was like, oh, I'm kind of dumb.
But well, no, there's a lot on there. Like, there's a lot to look at, right? So I mean, I think it's perfectly acceptable to miss details like that on the first go around. So
it didn't really change that much from the initial step. So the bloodstone was always in the background. We just made it, you know, a little more sparkly. I don't think the title, the font came a little later, but that was really it.
It's a beautiful cover. I love it. I'm holding it now. I just love staring at it. It's so great. Everything, you know what I mean? Everything is just, yeah, even the inside, and yeah, really great. Really great presentation. So congratulations on that, and to your team. I know people think authors have more to do with the cover than they actually do. Congrats to the team and the artist. And it's just a beautiful book. And I'm such a, like, I'm a real, like, I have OCD when it comes to my bookshelves, like how they look, and they got to look a certain way and stuff like that. And it's one of the few books I think I'm going to have displayed sideways.
Wow.
To show the cover.
I don't even have space to do that. I wish I did.
No, it'll be, that just means there'll be books you can't see. And trust me, right now, if you can see where I'm sitting, there are books stacked, piled on the floor around me. Like, there's books everywhere. You know, sort of every shelf, I have a book flipped sideways just so you can see the cover. And because the binding, the side doesn't have that orange like the cover does, right? So I want the orange. I want people to see the orange because it's...
I actually like how they made the spine a different color. And I noticed that they do this for a lot of these HarperCollins books. They
make the spine kind of a different color. And
well, it wraps around the backside, right? So and again, lovely color and all that. And I love how they put the bloodstone on the spine, right? That's a great feature. And it's on the back. Maybe it's important. Eh? Do you think the bloodstone's important? beautiful picture. You two on the back. Yeah. No, this is really great book, guys. So congratulations on that part. All right. So I know I just said I was going to try and avoid boring questions, but you know the drill. You are going to get asked what the book is about. So this is your chance. So like I said, we're going to use this show as practice because it's such a terrible one. I'm talking about myself, not you guys. Do you want to practice your elevator like summary pitch? Because you're going to get asked this question all the time, what the book's about, or do you want me just to read the summary, which is actually refreshingly short?
It is. It's short on the arc.
Is it longer for the final?
Yeah, so the final version, they definitely changed it a little bit, and okay. They added more to it.
Oh, okay.
So you'll basically only be able to see that on the hardcover. It's not even online.
Oh, okay. Nice. That's a good incentive to buy it, though.
I don't know why they do it like that.
That's a great incentive to buy it. It's going to make, I mean, I'm buying it anyways, but, right, you know, if I was on the fence about it, let's say, like, because, I mean, like I was saying earlier, I don't get all physical arcs now all the time. Sometimes they're digital, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, there's a lot of books where I'm buying them if I like the cover, especially. So like in that instance, like if I had a digital only, I'd be like, oh, I'm buying the book. I would have to buy the book for sure then, just for that.
Which is interesting because the arc, it actually mentions that they're twins separated at birth. Whereas like if you look anywhere else online, it doesn't say that they're twins. So that's something that I wonder if people know that going into the book, or is it just obvious because we're twin writers that we're writing about twins or what?
It is true. I'm reading it now, the summary, the arc summary. And yeah, it doesn't say the word twin, right?
On the back of the arc, it says twin separated at birth. But in the general summary.
Oh, at that little blurb says, right there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's not on the hardcover.
Right.
In the general summary, it just says that they look identical and they switch.
Yeah. Okay.
It's called Sisters of the Snake. I think you got the idea.
Sure. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Most people would for sure. But. Anyway, all right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just read this old waste of time summary then.
I mean, that's just not a good elevator. I have a little mini pitch.
Okay. Go ahead. Then you do it because you like I said, you know, you guys are going to get asked this a lot. So
yeah. Okay. So Sisters of the Snake is the first in a YA fantasy duology that's following twin sisters separated at birth. One of them is a princess and the other one is a street thief, and they meet and decide to swap places on the Wally night.
That's it. You're like, that's it. That's good enough. Yeah. I mean, that's it. Right. So that's, and like, this is all promotional language, right? Of course it's meant to just sort of like, you know, get me, whet my appetite a little bit without giving next to nothing away. But that's not like, doesn't really talk about necessarily the beating heart of the book though, right? Like if there's one thing you want readers to take away from Sisters, what would it be, Sasha? What in your opinion, there's one thing just, and it can be something as simple as just sisterhood. It can be, you know, found family.
Yeah, those are definitely some important themes in the book. And I do hope, you know, they are sisters, but they come from such completely different backgrounds that the way that they interact with the world is so different.
Yep.
And the way that they come together, like, again, it's kind of that idea of balancing each other out, like the way that Serena and I do. Like, we are actually quite different, and our friends know that. They're kind of easily able to tell us apart because of our differences. Not just in the way we look. We're fraternal, identical. People think we're identical. But yeah, I do hope that people take away the fact that sisterhood can really come in all these different shapes and sizes. And I hope that people find that in Rhea and Ronnie.
We talked about earlier about how, you know, truly collaborative this story was with you two, right? Like, you know, how most people will automatically think you both took a sister and ran with it. But no, that's a huge advantage, being able to talk things through like that, isn't it? So because you're both so familiar with each one, it doesn't really matter who I asked this to. So this is just like random. Serena, tell me about Ronnie.
Well, Ronnie's interesting because it was actually Sasha who first wrote her.
Damn it, I got it wrong. I had a 50-50 chance. I got it wrong.
It's interesting because I started writing Rhea, and when I shared it with Sasha, she was like, oh my gosh, I want to start writing the next perspective. So
nice.
She started writing Ronnie, and then I read her chapter and I was like, this is so good. Let's keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what we like the most, I think, about Ronnie is that, especially at the beginning, she's pretty stubborn. She's pretty like stuck up, the
yep.
stuck up princess. And that was just so much fun to write about because we'd never written this kind of voice before. And you know, that's what I think made this project really stand out for us versus projects that we worked on before. We had a really hard time finding the voice of the story,
mm-hmm.
whereas in this book, because we had two very distinct viewpoints, you know, like
right.
the princess, we could really play around with, you know, how they would talk, what kind of slang they would use, you know, how they would interact with the world. So yeah, Rani is, I think she's like a misunderstood character because she's all stuck up, but you know, I really love her.
I like Ronnie a lot, and she's tough, I think.
Yeah.
Right. I think she's, and a lot of that is she's, I think, because, and this is for both of them, but they're highly motivated, eh? And when you're that motivated, it's like you just keep pushing forward. And very impressed with how tough they both were, how just like how much stick-to-itiveness they've got, right, to see this thing through. Because, you know, there's so many times where I would have just given up and gone home and gone to bed. Sasha, then tell me about Rhea.
Well, Rhea gave me a hard time sometimes. you know, the first draft, actually, I really did like writing Rhea. And even moving forward after that, I found that Rhea's time in the palace, that was really fun.
Yeah.
Because you got to see this, you know, character who hates royalty, and then she realizes that she is one. And all of a sudden, you know, she's questioning all of these things. And we got to add in so many kind of layers of mystery. We really love mystery books and mystery movies.
Uh-huh.
We watch like made for TV ones. They're great. And so we decided to like add all these layers of mystery to Rhea's perspective. And so we found that really fun. And if I had to choose like a favorite between Rhea and Ronnie, I would pick Rhea.
Okay.
Not so, just because she's younger by 10 minutes, which I
understood. Listen, I'm not, whether there's subtext there or not, I'm not getting in the middle of co-writers or sisters. There's no way I'm getting in the middle of that. Serena, sort of like, I'm talking about in universe now for Ronnie and Rhea, like in the absence of each other, because they haven't, you know, they haven't found each other till later in life. And then they're even only together for a very quick moment, right? Before they go off and do their own thing again. You sort of give each one a surrogate sister in this book with Sonia and Aditi, which I thought was really, and I don't know if that's the way you thought of it when you did it, when you made these characters, but it dawned on me that you gave them each a sister, because so they get a taste of sisterhood, then they're separated again by their own terms this time at least, but then you immediately give each one a surrogate sister, and I thought that was really cool. Is that sort of how you intended it for Sonia and Aditi to come across, and maybe talk about sort of creating those two characters?
Well, first of all, I really like that word choice of the surrogate sister. I never even thought of that before, but it's interesting because Aditi, she's just one of our favorite characters in the whole
book. She's great. She's fantastic.
She's just love her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's just that kind of perfect, you know, unassuming character, especially with her friendship that she forms with Rhea in the palace. It's just like you would never expect that kind of friendship to form. And I think that's just why we really love Aditi. And obviously, you know, you learn more as you go through the book, but... Mm. For Ronnie, it was interesting because in former drafts, we actually had, Sonia actually had a sister. So we had to cut that when we were working with our editor because it was just becoming too many characters on Ronnie's side of things.
Right.
So, and then we changed it to make Sonia a mere sister. So in the original draft, Sonia was not a mere sister.
Okay.
So by adding that in, we were able to kind of just play around with the family relationships, you know, how Amir and Sonia have a lot of friction from the start of their chapters. And, you know, that's just kind of the perfect way to show that foil between brother and sister, or even between sister and sister in this case with Rhea and Ronnie. And Ronnie really starts to see how Amir and Sonia's relationship can kind of heal and how she can do that with Rhea as well.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really beautiful how their relationship, like, it's a really comes full circle, it's right. It's so great the way Sonia and Rhea bring it together, like, or Ronnie, sorry, bring it together. Really fantastic how they, you know, how they, from when they start to where they end, it's such a great journey. And probably at the end of the day, Sonia and Aditi were my favorite characters in the book. Question for both of you. So you do this, you do, you surround these two girls with a lot of great characters. You know what I mean? It's not just Sonia and Aditi. There's a lot. And there's a little romance in this book. So there's, so that means in this case, boys. So this question's for both of you. And you set it up this way, so it's fair game. You got to pick one. Amir, Saeed, and if you want, I'll even throw in Irfan if you want a third option.
All right. How do I choose?
start with Sasha.
You know, I have thought about this a lot.
I like both of them for different reasons.
And yes, well, they're both likable for different reasons. Yep, for sure.
Yeah, but if I had to choose, I'd go with Saeed.
Okay. Serena?
Yeah, that's funny because I was going to say if I had to choose, I would go with Amir.
See?
I don't know. I just feel like I really like Saeed, don't get me wrong. Like, I love him. But Amir, I feel like I just really like his story. I really like, you know, his journey. I don't know.
I think I'd like both, but I think I'm Team Amir.
I'm Team Amir. Yeah. I'm going to have to be on the outs for this one, but that's yeah. fine.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's Team Amir. It's Amir or nothing. Yeah, I think I just like he's, you know, they both have like tremendous strengths, right? And some weaknesses as well. But I just identify more with sort of like the more Amir's just more scrappy. You know what I mean? Like he's you know, having to survive like he did. And I like his backstory a lot, which we won't get into too much or at all because it kind of does lead down a spoilery path. It's really, Team Amir. That's it. That's the answer. Sasha, the Shima part is really, really cool and is a huge part of this book, this companion animal idea. And you've sort of, I'm going to call it soul bonding. I'm not sure what you guys call it, something similar in the book. Talk about this idea of soul bonding with Shima's a snake, by the way, if anyone doesn't know. talk about, you know, how these you came up with this idea of having people sort of bond with like an animal companion, and because that idea could go sideways in a book, right? It could go in the wrong direction real quick. It could feel hokey, or you know what I mean, kind of like you're like talking animal, you're like what? But it's not necessarily how you guys. You don't play it that way. You play it differently. And I think it really works the way you did play it. So talk about sort of this idea of having this companion animal stuff.
Yeah. So the idea of the snake familiars, even though we didn't actually call it that in the beginning, it took several drafts for us to kind of come up with the idea of like actually calling them familiars.
Right.
In the very first draft, Shima was there and she was essentially Ronnie's snake familiar. And the idea of the snake magic was very prominent. It was actually the only magic in the story in the first few drafts. It took us a really long time to get the magic system down. Uh-huh. And so in the beginning, it was just kind of snake magic and that was it. And even then it wasn't heavily explored. It was just sort of the idea of Shima being bonded with Ronnie. And so the idea of the bonding ceremony, which is when a snake will essentially pour their venom into a human's like wrist and essentially bond with them, or your idea of soul bonding. And that way they can communicate in their minds. That kind of, the idea that was actually always there, but it really took a lot of kind of like that terminology behind it and thinking deeper about, okay, maybe at this age is when you're gonna find your snake familiar, then at this age you're gonna train. And we had to really think a lot about that. Uh-huh. And it took a long time for us to really, you know, Shima's sassiness was there from the start, but it took a long time for her relationship with Rhea for us to get that right. Several drafts and working with our editor, actually.
Okay, I could see, yeah, it's really, I think it worked out real well then. Whatever it looked at the beginning, obviously I don't know, but I think you understand what I'm saying is where like in some books that could, it could be Dr. Doolittle in some, in some books, right? It would just, it could be played for just camp, for campiness or comedy. Now there is some levity in that relationship, right? Because Shima's kind of grumpy and, you know what I mean? And, you know, and Rhea's at that point is like sort of short with Shima at the beginning. So there is some levity there, right? There's some moments where you're, where it's, they do have some funny exchanges for sure, but it's not, you know, talking baboon, you know, like we, you know, it's not weird. It's never weird. Even though it's high fantasy and it's weird, it's never weird. You know what I mean? You got, so which means, which is my way of saying, I think you guys played it just right. You found just the right balance there.
I think Shima's my favorite character, just like her sassiness and the relationship that they build together. I just love it.
Awesome. Serena, we're not going to say who like the main villain is, and that's too spoilery. And you do you guys do use a lot of sort of misdirection in the book, right? To sort of throw people off the trail. And well, even though, what's that?
I hope so.
Yes. And you know, even though I found this person to be despicable for sure, but they're not entirely without cause. Like they're lost more than they're evil, I think. Like they're brokenhearted in a way. So I found myself with a bit of empathy, a little bit of sympathy towards the villain. Am I getting that wrong? Did you want me to hate? Did you want me to completely hate them, or am I just weird? Like, is that how you wrote them? Because that's how it feels like you wrote them, and I thought it was really cool. And I love villains like that in books. Like, I don't like. Sometimes it's nice to have just a plain villain who's doesn't give a shit about anything or anybody, but sometimes it's nice when they're complicated too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the best kind of the villains are the ones where you know, they have that sob story, sure, but you really relate to them, or you just feel, you know, you can understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
So in the case of this villain, they were always the villain from the start.
Okay.
And, you know, with our revisions with our editor, we kind of gave them even more, I don't want to be spoilery, but, you know, we just kept going bigger.
It's a tough question to answer without spoilers, I know. And
But okay. We had to give them a lot of motivation and give them, you know, something really huge that they want to accomplish.
Sure.
Something, you know, really world changing.
Right. Which is kind of where we're headed with that amazing epilogue you guys did. I love prologues. I love epilogues. Do you remember this thing that went around on Twitter like a few months ago where people were saying they don't read prologues? And I'm just like, fuck you. What do you mean you don't read prologues? Like,
so why would you skip the prologue?
Why would you listen? If you wrote it, I'll read it. And this epilogue, I love epilogues and prologues, and I love it when I love a good prologue and a good epilogue. And this is a great epilogue, completely like leaves you hanging and sets the table for book two in a great way. And that, you know, of course involves the villain. It has to in a way, but it's everything that you just said, sort of where, you know, you've set the table for this. It feels things are going to get more, even more epic in a hurry. Is that the sense? Is that sort of, were you guys happy with the way this book ended? Because you leave it in a way like, it's not one of these books where I've read books that are duologies where the first book could go either way. Like if that was the only book, if it was a standalone, you'd be like, eh, okay. But not this one.
Yeah, actually the epilogue came later with the help of our editor.
Okay.
So our editor told us, like, what if you had something at the end of the book that kind of felt like, you know, when you watch an Avengers movie and then there's a little clip in the middle of the credits.
Right.
It's like they just sort of throw it at you and it's a short kind of snappy thing. And so we were like, oh, that's a cool idea.
It is an end scene credit, isn't it? Like Nick Fury's standing there. So what'd you call it?
I think it was called a coda.
Okay.
I can't remember, but basically like an extra little scene just
It's amazing. It's really great. And it just like, you know, succeeds in so many, in every way that, you know, it's supposed to, right? Especially in a book that then there's more story to tell. Now that means Sasha gets the hard question. Explain the Master of Souls without spoilers.
All right, without spoilers.
Maybe just from a concept, right? From a conceptual idea, then, if you can. If
it's so the idea of that really came much later. It was actually the second draft with our editor that Serena came up with that idea.
Okay. I did.
Yeah, you.
She did. I did. Yes, Serena, you did. Don't you remember?
Yeah, Sasha has just this amazing memory. Like, you can just give her a date, or like you can just ask her like 5 years ago, what were you doing, and she would know.
Oh, I used to be like that, but now that I'm just old and dumb, I don't even remember who you guys are anymore. I don't even know, like, what book are we talking about. So that's great, yeah. Sasha. I'm glad, because it's hang on to that. Memory is an important thing.
With the Master of Souls, we came up with this magic system with these different masters, and we wanted this idea of like, what if there was another master that was never fully made? Mm. I'm not gonna go into it much deeper than that, right. So
this is at the beginning of the book too. You do this really cool thing where you explain all these different masters. It was, you know, Snake Master, Memory, Earth, Sky, Fire, Tide. All these different masters of their elemental magic systems, right? In a way, are we going to see all of the masters?
Well, you know, in the sequel, it is way more, you know, involved with the magic and the magic system. So, okay. Answer your question, Steve. That's a maybe. But, you know,
you guys are pros. I'm telling you, you guys are pros. I love it. So I don't know when I'm going to air this episode yet. Listen, the Sisters of the Snake comes out June 15th, whether it's already out or is coming out when this airs. Everyone, please buy this book. It is so great. I love Sasha and Serena already, even though we just met. We're going to be lifelong friends. And if we ever open things up again, I'm going to stalk them in Toronto or Mississauga and find out where they hang out with all these other really cool, smart authors and just crash their party. I can't recommend this book enough. I love it. And you want to get in on the ground floor, right? You don't want to wait till book 2 comes out, unless you're one of these people that has to read both at the same time, which I wish I had the ability to do that, the willpower, but I do not. Get in on the ground floor, get this thing right away. It's got so much atmosphere. You know what I love about this book, Sasha and Serena, is it like you go after all 5 of my senses. The food in this book, I'm so hungry when I read this book.
I love food.
I think I read somewhere where you guys really like to cook together a lot too. It's one of your favorite things to do. The food in this book is great. Like, you smell it, and not just the food, but you smell the towns and the cities and the, you know, everything. You can hear everything. You smell it. You feel it. You know, you can see it, you vision it. All 5 senses are at play here, and that's really great. And that just shows how creative and talented you guys are. So everyone, please buy this book. Sisters of the Snake Part 2, Even More Snakes. That's what I'm calling it. That's not the official title. Where are you at? You just said you outlined it in over the holidays. Are you into edits? What's going on?
Yeah, so we handed in a draft in April, and then our editor got back to us a few weeks later. Yeah. And so we're working on it now, and it's actually due the day our book comes out.
Of course, right? Why would you be able to celebrate a book release if, you know, why would they want you to do that? It's funny how often that happens, with this stuff, but
we've got the major stuff down, so
okay. All right.
Hopefully, you know.
All right. Well, not till this book's out anyways, right? So yeah, we'll look forward to hearing the title probably months from now at this point. Maybe even longer, and then a cover late after that, and all those great little moments when these things happen on the calendar, and then we get to see more. But I don't know, but do you guys like, I love unboxing videos. I don't know about you, but I cry every time. every time I cry when I watch an unboxing video. I love it. It's just such a pure, the joy is so pure and honest. It's just a great. Even More Sisters of the Snake Part 2, Even More Snakes comes out. We'll probably come out around a year this time. So, but we'll, I look forward to talking to you guys again about that. You know, I wish you had more books out. We could talk sooner, but we'll have to wait. Thank you so much for doing this, Sasha and Serena. All the best. Have a great. Oh, what do you got going on for the release, other than handing in your final? What, you got a launch panel or anything going on? What do you got going on?
Yeah, we've got a U.S. event that we're doing with Danielle Clayton, the author of The Bells. So we're doing that on June 15th.
Yep.
And then June 29th, we're doing a Canadian event with Tanaz Bathana, who wrote Hunted by the Sky.
Yep, nice.
So that's going to be with the book Wardrobe. It's going to be a Zoom event. So perfect. All the information is on our website.
Okay.
I actually just updated our website today. So.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's good. I will be at those events. I love those events. And those are two great people you've partnered up with for sure. Definitely read Blackout if you haven't read that yet. That's fantastic. So, all right. Go to their website if you want to learn how to get these events, how to buy the book, all that great stuff. Sasha and Serena, have a wonderful weekend.
There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Serena and Sasha for taking the time to chat with me. It was a real pleasure for me getting to talk to all things Sisters of the Snake with them, and they are both very cool. Sisters of the Snake is out now, so head on over to serenasashabooks.com to order a copy of this beautiful book today. I'm telling you, it's worth it just for that cover alone. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.